Hello, and welcome to our urinary tract system presentation, part two. This is all about assessments. We're going to be looking at lab testing, we're going to be looking at imaging, we're going to look at all the different ways to assess for dysfunction and imbalance in the urinary tract system. So before we begin, I want to make sure that you're aware that all the information I'm presenting here is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional. It's also not considered medical advice. And I recommend that whenever you are presenting information and working with your clients, unless you have a medical degree and you are their primary care physician, that you make this disclaimer because you want to make sure that they're aware that you're giving them education, that you are not replacing their doctor. So let's take a look at the urinary tract module at a glance. Part one was about anatomy and physiology. We're moving now into part two, which is assessment. And then we'll go into kind of the fun parts, which are pathology and balancing protocols. So let's look at all the different ways that we can assess the urinary tract. Remember, the urinary tract consists of the kidneys, the ureters, the bladder, and the urethra. So you can use blood testing. We'll go through all the details about that. You can use urinalysis, which makes sense, right? Since the urinary tract does produce urine, we're going to check for blood and pus and bacteria and protein and other things. We're going to look at blood pressure because blood pressure can be a reflection of what's going on in the kidneys. When the kidneys aren't filtering properly, we can get an increase or a decrease even in the blood pressure. We're going to look at a urine culture. So if the urinalysis that usually is done preliminarily with a dipstick shows up that there's some issues, we will look at a culture and actually see if there's something growing there and what is growing there. We can also look at them structurally by doing an ultrasound or a CT scan. There is an X-ray that can be done. It's called the KUB, kidney, bladder, ureters, but that may not be as accurate as doing an ultrasound or CT scan. We'll take a look at that. We'll take a look at something called a VCUG, avoiding cystourethrogram, and that's actually an X-ray to view problems in the urethra and bladder. A digital rectal exam can also be considered part of the urinary tract system. It's actually considered a ureterogenital exam, but because of when a prostate gets swollen in men, it actually impacts their urinary tract system. So that could be part of it, depending on the symptoms. There are some things that can be looked at to get a radioactive image of the kidney, and that's called dimerocaptosuccinate, DMSA for short, scintigraphy, radioactive material imaging. There's also listening. That's the old-fashioned way, right? Nobody really does a lot of that, but it's really an effective way to listen to the bladder by tapping on the lower abdomen to see, is it seem like it's too full? Like, does it seem hollow? A kidney punch, which it's kind of fun. Most people don't like them, but punching over the kidney for looking for pathology and then palpating for tenderness over the side or lower back. A lot of times when someone's complaining of low back pain or flank pain, we want to make sure that we really ask the right questions to rule out whether it's actually a problem with the kidneys versus a musculoskeletal problem with the low back. So let's take a look at some lab findings that are associated with kidney dysfunction. Serum creatinine. The clearance of creatinine can give an indication of the kidney function. If it's too high, there may be some pathology going on in the kidneys. If it's too low, it can often indicate that there's a protein malabsorption or a protein deficiency. Glomerular filtration rate is a good measure. It's actually how well are the kidneys functioning. If the GFR, glomerular filtration rate, is actually too low, it may be that there's a problem with the kidneys not being able to filter properly, and that could lead to a lot of buildup of toxicity in the body and blood pressure, etc. We've got the blood urea nitrogen and the serum albumin. The blood urea nitrogen is a measure of how much nitrogenous wastes are being filtered. And if that's high, it's often an indication of the kidneys having problems. And if it's low, it could be similarly to creatinine, an indication that there's either not enough protein or malabsorption syndrome that is occurring. And serum albumin is a type of protein, and that along with protein and globulin can be an indication of kidney function. They also, you know, can be a liver function too. And then we look at the bun creatinine ratio. We look at urine protein. If we have too much protein in the urine, oftentimes that's an indication that the kidneys aren't filtering properly and the protein is seeping into the urine. So we want to investigate that. We sometimes get that in cases where there's a kidney stone and it's breaking down cells from the walls, and you'll see that in the urinary tract. Sometimes that's accompanied by blood, but not necessarily. It's also seen a lot of times in urinary tract infections. So those are key warning signs, and those are urine albumin and creatinine. All of these in the urine indicate that the body is not properly filtering and these things are going out. And then we look at ratios of various things. Again, and in addition, we can look at hemoglobin. And again, that can be an indication of kidney stuff, hematocrit, transferrin saturation, serum ferritin, parathyroid hormone, calcium, phosphorus, potassium, sodium chloride, and blood lipids can also be indicative of kidney dysfunction. We're going to look at each of these in a little bit more detail, and a lot of these are also covered in detail in our blood chemistry module. So let's look at the urine test for kidney dysfunction. Protein in the urine means the kidneys aren't filtering it well, and it can be an early sign of kidney disease. It can also be a sign of stones or infection. Blood may be a sign of stones or infection as well, because we're breaking down the cell walls as that stone passes through these very narrow ureters and urethra. Nitrites, they can be a sign of infection. That's usually a byproduct of the infection, the bacteria creating these nitrates that elevate in the urine. Bacteria, also a sign of, obviously, of infection. Creatinine, which is a waste product of muscle metabolism, and it should be cleared entirely by the kidneys. And if we have a low level, it's poor kidney function and not a good place to be. Then we look at the albumin creatinine ratio. So as the kidneys lose function, the albumin is going to go up and the creatinine is going to go down. So we look at those levels in the urine. This is in the urine, and higher levels indicate a more serious problem. So let's look at a kidney blood panel. This is what's traditionally called the kidney blood panel, the blood urea nitrogen, the byproduct of protein metabolism that's eliminated through the kidneys. So if it's super low, it may be that we just don't have enough protein in the diet, or that's getting into the bloodstream because of malabsorption. If it's high, then it usually means that there's some kind of problem with the kidneys and it's not maintaining the protein balance in the bloodstream. If it's high, it usually indicates that there is a problem with it. This is in the blood again. It usually indicates that there's a problem with the kidneys and the elevation of the protein. It's not filtering it down. Creatinine is a muscle breakdown product as well, and it's used as an indicator of kidney function. Again, if it's low, we're looking at potentially not having enough musculature, not somebody being emaciated or someone not getting enough protein either through their diet or being absorbed. Uric acid is another byproduct of protein metabolism that's eliminated through the kidneys. We can get in trouble with uric acids because it can crystallize and form stones, which can cause kidney stones, which is very painful and could be dangerous. And it also can crystallize in other areas. So for example, in the situation of gout is a buildup of uric acid crystals in the joints. The bun creatinine ratio is dividing the bun by the creatinine. And if that gets too high, then we're going to see that there's an issue with this situation. And the GFR glomerular filtration rate is an assessment of the ability of the kidneys to filter the blood and get rid of toxins. So let's look at bun, blood urea nitrogen. Some of the indications, if it's high, could be low stomach acid. They could be on antibiotics or aspirin. They could be depleted of electrolytes, Dehydration is very common, and there's a number of things in the bloodstream that we look at. This alone does not indicate dehydration, but if you have a number of elevations in there, for example, red blood cells and hemoglobin, you can possibly be seeing a dehydration. So we want to look more carefully at that. And dehydration doesn't mean they're not drinking enough water. It means that the cells are not absorbing enough water. It's high in kidney disease, but it also can be high in heart attack. When the BUN is low, it can be a malabsorption situation, celiac, gluten intolerance, low stomach acid. Sometimes when people are using steroids, it will impair the blood urea nitrogen. So all these things are things that you want to keep in mind so that if you see these levels, these numbers, that you can ask the person questions and start to rule out some of these. Malnutrition, obviously, and muscle wasting diseases, and of course, liver or kidney disease. So blood urea nitrogen has problems on both ends, both high and low. So let's look at creatinine, kind of the sister of blood urea nitrogen. It could be high in dehydration. Again, it's one of those other signs. Enlarged prostate, pressing on the urinary bladder, in men, obviously. Kidney disease and muscle breakdown, actually breakdown of muscle, like the muscle wasting type of diseases. It can be low in situations of low stomach acid, inadequate protein. It gets low a little bit in pregnancy and in severe liver disease and muscle wasting. So we're going to be looking at these and thinking in terms of, well, we can rule out pregnancy pretty easily. We can rule out enlarged prostate in women, obviously, right? But the muscle wasting, the low stomach acid, we're going to have to look a little bit more deeply to see why and what's happening there. Is it a lack of protein in the diet? Is it a lack of absorption of the protein? And why? Why is that happening? So let's look at uric acid. Well, it's high when there's slow kidney clearance. It's high when we have gout, and gout can be associated with a deficiency of B6 and magnesium because the B6 and magnesium will grab on to the uric acid crystals. It also does that with oxalates, by the way, too. So that can be a problem. Uric acid tends to be high in insulin resistance and diabetes and in starvation situations. So again, when you see these numbers out of range, and I'm talking out of the ideal range, it's not necessarily a pathology out of the ideal range, but it means the person's heading in that direction. And if you're wanting to review the ideal range versus the conventional lab range, that's covered in a lot of detail in our blood chemistry intro module. So what can low uric acid mean? Well, sometimes when B12 is deficient. When B12 or folate or both are deficient, you're going to see other signs. So you want to look at that and put the picture together. B12 deficiency and folate deficiency can result in an elevated MCV, mean corpuscular volume, or an elevated homocysteine. So those are things to be looking at before we jump to the conclusion that low uric acid means that right away that there's a kidney problem. It can also be a molybdenum deficiency, and we can look at that as well. And if you look at genes, you can look at some of the sulfur metabolism pathways to see if those are backed up. Molybdenum deficiency is a problem there. So the GFR, glomerular filtration rate, if it's high, it's generally not clinically significant. At least no one has figured that out to be. But whenever it's low, like less than 90, it's an indication of a mild loss of kidney function. If it's less than 60, it could be a moderate loss of kidney function. And there's on the labs, you're going to see black versus Caucasian listed as a different range. So some of it is a little bit different based on age, race, gender, and also looking at creatinine levels to estimate the kidney function. Used to be they just reported it as greater than 59, and now it's much more specific when you get the tests back for this. So let's look at acid-alkaline balance, which is critical for proper kidney function. We have signs of the acidosis would be high chloride, high potassium, and high carbon dioxide. And signs of alkalosis, which we don't see a lot, but it definitely need to be aware of it, is low chloride, low potassium, and low carbon dioxide. I see a lot more of the high and the acidosis, and acidosis really puts a strain on the kidneys. The kidney has to filter that extra acid waste product. Kidney marker patterns. So let's look at something in renal dysfunction. We're going to see an elevated BUN, blood urea nitrogen, a low creatinine, elevated bun creatinine ratio, high phosphorus, high LDH, lactose dehydrogenase, high SGOT, high uric acid, and low hemoglobin and hematocrit, low white blood cells, and high eosinophils. So these are just things to look at. And if it doesn't mean that all of these have to be in place, but if you see all or most of these indicators off on their blood testing, then it's a really good chance you've got to investigate further for kidney dysfunction. And I will say that you don't necessarily on any condition have to have all of the markers out of balance. Some of these might be normal. They may not be abnormal yet, but they're heading in that direction when you see a pattern that looks like this. So kidney markers, what does it look like if someone's in a muscle wasting? We're going to see creatinine high. We're going to see SGOT, SGPT, LDH, and CPK all elevated or normal. Now, we go through all of those in detail in the blood chemistry module, if you want to look through that. LDH, lactose dehydrogenase, there's isoenzymes 4 and 5. The kidneys are indicated by 4 and the skeletal muscle and liver by 5. So just seeing an LDH elevated doesn't mean it's kidney, doesn't mean it's liver. You have to look a little bit more deeply. So those are the ones to be looking at here. And isoenzymes are just breakdowns. So some of these enzymes, these liver enzymes, as we a lot of times call them, like SGOT, SGPT, LDH, alkaline phosphatase, some of them have isoenzymes, meaning that they can mean a lot of things depending on which of the subcategories are there. And CPK isoenzyme can be indication of muscle. Kidney marker patterns. So what do we look for in like an edema? We often see an elevated bun, a low sodium, a low albumin, and a low hematocrit. And the edema, there's different kinds of edema. And I always get concerned about kidney function and blood pressure if I see edema. There's pitting edema. When you push the finger in, the finger does not pop back out right away. And that would be an indication oftentimes of blood pressure problems and kidney problems. I've seen this elevated, including on myself when I overdid licorice and it caused me to be retaining too many fluids, started noticing this pitting edema in my ankles. And I have bony ankles and all of a sudden my bones weren't showing so much. And when I pressed in, yeah, I was seeing indications of pitting edema. And that was from the licorice that was putting a strain on my kidneys and changing the aldosterone levels. You just have to watch for that. But pitting edema needs to be investigated because it could be an early sign of congestive heart failure, right? Kidney failure, high blood pressure. There's a lot of things that are very serious. So it's really important to be looking at that. So let's look at another test called the organic acid test. I usually run this through either Great Plains Labs or Genova Diagnostics. And it's a great test. It has all kinds of indications for the variety of metabolic pathways in the body. But in terms of oxalates, the things we want to look for are elevated oxalic acid, that's the actual oxalates in the bloodstream that have been dumped into the urine from the kidney. So if you have high oxalic acid in the urine, we're going to be suspecting that there's high oxalic acid in the blood, which could lead to a lot of problems. Elevated glyceric and glycolic acid, those often indicate that there's more of a genetic tendency to have high oxalates. We're going to see vitamin B6, and if you see it low on the organic acid test, that could be an indication that there's some problems with the oxalates. The candida overgrowth, which is on the first page of the test, and it's not actually measuring candida, but it's measuring a lot of the byproducts that the candida will produce. And then very high vitamin C. Vitamin C intake, when it's high, the vitamin C can get converted to oxalates. So people who are sensitive to oxalates or already have too much oxalate are needing to be careful with how much vitamin C they take. But all of these are showing on this test, and you can look at it and put the picture together. Just because somebody has a vitamin B6 deficiency doesn't mean they have an oxalate problem. But the combination of that with the elevations in oxalic acid, candida overgrowth, high vitamin C, you're going to see more of a picture that paints oxalate sensitivity. Now, if you add that to the clinical picture of someone having a history of kidney stones, because they're predisposed to kidney stones, and also perhaps having pain like vulvodynia and other pains that can be indicative of a buildup of oxalate crystals, like problems in the eyes. Those are all things to be looking for, to put a picture together to see if they have an oxalate problem. And it could be the kidneys that they're not filtering properly, but oftentimes it's putting a strain on the kidneys and it's predisposing to kidney stones. And there's genetic tendencies. Some people can have all the oxalates in the world and not have a problem with them. And some people have genetic tendencies so that if they exceed their amounts and if they have leaky gut and a lot of other things go into it. So let's take a look at the urinary tract exam. How do we do this? How's some physical signs, some normal exam things? And this, you don't have to have a license to actually do these things. A lot of these things you can do, with the exception of the swollen prostate, you can actually have somebody do it themselves or have a family member help you to do it. And you can do these over Zoom. It's quite easy to do, like I said, with the exception of the digital rectal exam. So taking blood pressure. I mean, most people can get their own blood pressure cuff to do it at home. They can go to the grocery store or the pharmacies. A lot of them have blood pressure cuffs. So you just pay $1 and get your blood pressure taken. So it's not that hard to do. And elevated blood pressure could be an early warning sign of congestive heart failure. It could be a problem, early sign of kidney failure. And you just want to make sure it's checked out. The digital rectal exam, you know, when somebody's having an issue with nocturia, which is waking up multiple times in the middle of the night to pee, not being able to hold their urine, or not being able to start a stream or stop a stream, you want to make sure that there's no prostate involvement there. So it's causing a pathology that seems to be in the urinary tract system, but it's actually in the genitourinary system. You can listen to the bladder by tapping on the lower abdomen, and you can have them do that and see if it's hollow, if it sounds hollow. Like if you were to tap over the lungs, it sounds very different than tapping over the liver. So I'd suggest that you try those things on yourself and see hollow lungs, solid over the liver. Now the bladder should be, if they've just urinated, it should be empty. It should be hollow. If there's a mass or something else going on there and they have an empty bladder, there's either a urinary retention or some inflammation there. Kidney punch, nobody likes these, but it's basically punching over the flank in the back where the kidneys are located. And palpating for tenderness over the side or low back. Here's the thing, low back pain, somebody complaining of low back pain that they think that they have some sort of musculoskeletal issue, and they've been trying chiropractic and acupuncture and physical therapy and massage, and their back pain isn't going away. There's key questions you want to ask to rule out the kidneys. This was actually my exam question, my orals, when I was going for my license. And it was a kidney problem, but it presented as a low back problem. And I was actually one of the few that took it that got it, because I'm all, you know, geeky about learning the tracks, you know, the systems, the body systems versus just the musculoskeletal. So it's clear to me from the start, you know, the kinds of questions I asked. And you want to ask about the type of pain. So if they have pain in their low back and it's kind of spasmodic and it comes and goes, especially if it's both sides and it starts up right below the ribs. And also if the pain tends to be pretty severe and sharp, you want to make sure that there's not a kidney problem. And people are just thinking it's muscles and they get massage and adjustments all the time and it's not working. So, and you can tender, or you can have them palpate over the side and the low back between the hip bone and the rib cage. And that could be an indication of the kidney function. Another thing that can be done, and you'd have to order this if you don't have the license to order this is something that you may want to have communication with the client or, you know, their doctor, if they will allow that, to get some imaging done. So an ultrasound or CT scan, we're seeing that here, and you see the little indication of a stone. It's very subtle. You need to know how to look for it, but you can see that right over there. There, see where the little mark is right there? Okay, so that's normal, and that's a kidney stone. You can find other things, solid masses in there as well. Avoiding cystourethrogram, VCUG. It's an X-ray that will view problems in the urethral bladder. That's usually done with some sort of imaging technique. And then there's the DMSA scintigraphy, and that's a radioactive material imaging. So you've got to get the imaging material in. So generally, that's taking it orally, and then it will light up of the kidneys, and there's a specific viewing technique. The most common ones are going to be ultrasound or CT scan. Used to be they did a lot of KUBs, which is kidney, urethra, bladder, x-rays. And the x-rays, just because we're looking at a soft tissue, right? Organs work better with ultrasounds or MRIs versus things that are more in the structure, in the bone tissue, is more likely to be like a CT scan or an x-ray. So you don't want to expose people to too much x-ray and radiation. So you start with the least invasive. The least invasive would be an ultrasound. So that's the end of our urinary tract assessment module. You're going to see this stuff, so it's really important to know how to look at the labs, to know if there's specific labs that need to be ordered, and to know what kind of imaging to recommend them to get, or to send them to their doctor to order imaging if you're suspicious of certain things. And the more you learn as we get into the pathology and the protocols section of this module, you're going to have much more of an idea of how to help this person and how to have them intervene and get the right sort of thing happening. Thanks so much. We'll see you on the next one.